future is now. And welcome to the SBK Crypto Podcast. 15 minutes of crypto fade.
My name's Charles Story. I'll be your host for the next 15 minutes. We're coming live from the City of London, so let's get down to business. The date today is the 17th of the 10th, 2017. It's a Tuesday. The weather is looking pretty bland in London, so I hope it's better everywhere else. We've got Bitcoin currently trading at $5,997, Ethereum at $323, Ripple at 25 cents, and Litecoin at $60.77. I want to say a big thank you to everyone that followed us after yesterday's first podcast. And big thanks to everyone that listened to it as well. Please feel free to spread the good word. This will be live from London Monday to Friday, so every weekday. And we're looking to do this in London time in the evening. So please feel free to tune in and please feel free to share what we're currently up to.
Crypto news flash.
So our first story today is about former Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke. And basically, he was speaking at Ripple's Swell conference in Toronto yesterday, being held actually the same week and in the same city as Sibos. So the annual gathering hosted by Ripple's rival Swift, Bernanke told a room of several hundred attendees that he believes payments can be slow and expensive as designed using existing tools today. Bernanke, basically, who led the US central banking crisis during the 2008 crisis, outlined the complicated process it would take for a bank in Germany to send a payment to the US. And he was basically quoted saying, "It's an obvious area where new technologies like blockchain or these electronic currencies can be used to improve the current process." Now, Bernanke is now a distinguished fellow in residence at the Brookings Institute, called out Ripple by name, saying that he's read about the company's work and thinks, you know, their efforts will reduce costs, improve accuracy, speed and reliability. And there's another quote he was quoted saying, bringing the global economy closer together is a good thing. A bit of background to this guy here. So he basically, when he left the Federal Reserve, he was asked about Bitcoin back in about 2015, and he wasn't too impressed. So this is a quote he said when asked about it in 2015. He said, "Bitcoin is meant to be an attempt to replace fiat currencies in the vague government regulation and government intervention." And then he says after, "But they won't succeed because governments won't allow it. When Bitcoin becomes a threat, they'll take whatever action deemed necessary to quash it." So, I mean, you know, this guy, he's obviously seeing the light at the minute. It's going to change his tune a little bit and being a little bit more open about the blockchain. But, I mean, underlying this, he's very unsupportive of Bitcoin itself, but potentially can see the benefit to maybe Ripple or the cryptocurrencies themselves. And the second story today, I'm afraid to say, is a bit of a negative one from our Swiss friends over at UBS, and it was on CNBC, and they basically were quoted as saying Bitcoin is a speculative bubble. So basically, a report came out last week, and they were quoted as saying, this is one of the quotes: "We think the sharp rise in cryptocurrency valuations in recent months is a speculative bubble." And that's what they wrote in their white paper last week. And they also quoted saying, "Highly doubtful that these will ever become mainstream currencies. The need for companies and individuals to pay tax receipts in government-issued currency and the potentially unlimited crypto money supply pose significant barriers to widespread adoption." But I don't really understand where they're coming from with that, because I personally don't like paying tax. I mean, obviously, we have to. But if I had the choice not to do that, I'd be more happy doing that. And I mean, you know, these Swiss guys are very boring. I mean, they're not really looking into this as to take down the government. They're looking into this as how we're going to support the government. So I'm not okay with that. And I really think they've kind of missed the whole mark here. They go on to basically saying, "If governments refuse to accept cryptocurrencies for tax payments, the single most important transaction in an economy, this significantly reduces demand for cryptocurrencies. So governments are highly unlikely to ever take this step." I don't think they've really understood what this is about, and they're just kind of seeing it as a bit of a fad, not really taking it too seriously. So, you know, I'm not a big fan of UBS, and like other institutions out there, I mean, they're not really going with the flow on this one. Unlike Goldman Sachs, who's been a little bit quiet, and I think they're kind of working on a trading floor at present for Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. So they're obviously taking a bit of a different approach there. And you know what? I think they're probably right in doing so. Our third story today is an ICO ban in China. Now, this has been doing the rounds on the internet. So I've been reading about this quite a lot today. So it seems like the world of cryptocurrency has essentially moved on without China. So this is kind of, I'm going to read a bit of the article here and we'll go over some of the main points that I mentioned. So after they decided to excuse themselves from the race with a ban on ICOs on exchanges, this has led to other countries in Asia taking up the mantle, such as Korea and Japan. So basically had Japan, which has been one of the longtime champion states of Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies, labeling the biggest one, Bitcoin, legal tender earlier in the year. However, despite this friendly approach, those within Japan say an ICO ban could still be coming. Life after China, I mean, the Asian cryptocurrency market has been a long dominating one from mining to trade volume. But since China decided to set a hard line precedent, interest rates in the country have died down. However, the interest in the cryptocurrency itself has not died. In fact, it reached new highs last week. In the Asian market, there's been some appreciation of interest as other countries near to China have picked up the additional flow of cryptocurrency. South Korea swiftly followed China's lead in planning to ban initial coin offerings to the heavy opposition of local entrepreneurs, while Taiwan has warmed up to them instead. So Japan, as one of the early investors with its recognition of Bitcoin, has picked up a huge stake in the market, now trading about 63% of the world's Bitcoin, which is a huge amount. Not quite the liberal safe haven. Many in Asia see Japan as the liberal safe haven cryptocurrency, but Koji Higashi, co-founder of digital token wallet IndySquare and an outspoken figure in Japan's cryptocurrency scene, would not be so daring. So Japan is still a very risk-averse country, one of the strongly conservative in nature. Higashi says he still sees potential for an ICO crackdown as definitely a possibility. And this is one of his quotes. So he says, Japan's not really ICO friendly. Regulators are just a little bit more tentative over there. They're just trying to figure out if it's good or bad. And I understand that. And does it really mean that they're going to raise, are they just looking to raise money or they're looking to do something of value to the investors? And he's been basically speaking today about that. He's done a lot of interviews there. I guess he's trying to get his own brand out, like most of these dudes are. But I mean, he gives loads of articles, and I've read loads of different articles online about this dude, and he doesn't really say if anything's happening. He basically makes a quote, and he's like, well, you know, it might not happen, but it might happen. So he's not really a good guy to listen to there. I have to apologize for bringing him up. But I mean, Switzerland is another big country that's been very supportive of ICOs. We saw Taiwan, as mentioned in the article, they're very supportive of ICOs. England is kind of in the gray. We haven't really come out and supported it, but we haven't been negative about it. So that's another good country. And in Malaysia, they've got a few countries there who are very supportive as well. So it's worth keeping an eye out what's going on, and I'll be bringing you the top news there as well. And our last story for today is actually one of my favorite. It's the headline, the new classic, protesters are already plotting alternative Ethereums. So an Ethereum hard fork wouldn't be complete without a protest movement or two. So the second largest public blockchain by total value, Ethereum, successfully forked yesterday, activating a bundle of upgrades that make its blockchain faster and better suited for developers. But while the shift looks to have gone smoothly, with no problems impacting transactions or contracts, groups that disagree with some of the changes are already gearing up to galvanize like-minded supporters for moves in different directions. So what we've got going on at the minute on Twitter and many of the forums, a lot of people are calling Ethereum no longer decentralized. They're kind of, you know, shitting all over it, to be honest, to put it blank with you. And the reason why, like we saw before of Ethereum Classic, and when that hard forked and turned into Ethereum, there's many people still out in the crypto world who believe in Ethereum Classic. Even I think Ethereum Classic's trading around $15 at the minute. The volumes are, you know, probably an eighth of what Ethereum really is. But people still believe in it, because most of these currencies like Bitcoin, like Ethereum, people believe in the technology to the extent whereby They don't really look at the financials of it, and they just do it for the idea and the long term vision. So we had a lot of people pissed off yesterday about the fact that it's split and the fact that it's basically upgraded, and they're kind of moaning. But you know what? Let them moan, and we're going to keep buying Ethereum because that's what SVK Crypto do. We're investing in the space. So I'm not saying that I recommend buying it. You know what I mean? But I'm still buying it. So it's a good thing to do. I believe in the technology there. And I also believe in the ICO space. And I think that if you are investing in ICOs, the majority of them are done through the Ethereum blockchain. And I think that if ICOs are going to keep expanding like they are, keep raising money and keep breaking the targets and get more and more interesting companies coming through, then why wouldn't you want to invest into Ethereum and Monero, which are the two kind of currencies people choose to raise funds on? So, I mean, that's just kind of my viewpoint there, and I think it's a good one to buy. And I also think it's incredibly undervalued. So other than that, let's bounce to the next section.
Top Twitter tweet of the day.
All right, guys, here we go. So one of my favorite ones today I've seen is from one of our followers, @cashflow_queen. Her comment was, people used to think I was crazy when I told them the internet was going to be everything. They still think I'm crazy. I'm talking about Bitcoin. Boom. I love that. I think that's great. The second quote we've got here today is from our follower, Ben Jaduvul. And that's @BENJADUVAL. And he basically says the price of Bitcoin has a 91% correlation with Google searches for Bitcoin. #trading. I love that. Boom. Keep the good work up, guys. We salute you.
SVK's current global crypto view.
All right, guys. Today I'm going to be speaking about QuantStamp. Super interesting company. We've got QuantStamp. They're basically providing a protocol which audits smart contracts deployed on the Ethereum blockchain. Malicious or poorly written code have basically a huge implication if they're not found and resolved, which is exactly what QuantStamp do and are proposing to do. On top of this, QuantStamp have built their protocol to have the capacity to scale with the Ethereum blockchain as more and more smart contracts are deployed. So the implementation of QuantStamp should provide the foundations for mass adoption of smart contract technology in the future, giving investors and users peace of mind. So here's the deal. So they're basically releasing a billion QSM, and that's what the token's going to be called. It's a fixed total supply. The token allocation, let's break this down here. So 65% is going to go to the token sale, 5% to the community development, team and advisors 20%, and 10% for core activities reserve. Okay, so use of proceeds, 50% for product development, 5% for security, administrative and general 15%, marketing and community 30%, and I believe the hard cap is $30 million. So they're not looking to go for some of these crazy figures like I've seen. I'm sure you guys have as well. They're looking to raise like $150 million and they haven't even done anything. I mean, these guys are already working with many companies out there to produce smart contracts, and they basically audit them. So I believe they're a really great company. One, as I said previously in the show, this is another reason to buy Ethereum. I mean, you got crazy dudes like these guys here. I believe they work for some of the best companies out there, IBM, Toshiba, and they're working on this technology. And what they're looking to do is they're looking to work with Ethereum and build Ethereum up. So that's another reason to buy Ethereum, I believe. Other than that, I've got to bounce. It's been emotional. Have a great day. I'll see you guys tomorrow. Ciao.
Listening to an SVK Crypto Podcast original. Follow us on Twitter at @SVK_crypto. Email us on cstory@svkcrypto.com. Leave us a message on our website www.svkcrypto.com.